Support for Living on Earth comes from listeners like you. To make a donation, please use the link to the left of this webpage. And thanks.
From the Jennifer and Ted Stanley Studios in Somerville, Massachusetts, this is Living on Earth. I'm Jeff Young. We've been whipsawed lately by conflicting accounts of just how much of BP's oil is still in the Gulf. A government report gave the impression that most of it was gone. Then scientists with the Georgia Sea Grant program concluded that most of it is still there, suspended underwater. The journal Science published a study by the Woods Hole Oceanographic Institution documenting an oil plume, then published another study suggesting that microbes were eating that submerged oil. We've asked Christopher Reddy to help us understand what's going on. He's a marine chemist at Woods Hole.
I was a part of a real superstar group, a team of scientists, and during the last 2 weeks of June, we used a series of different types of technology to identify and track a plume that existed about a half mile deep below the ocean that went out about 22 miles long.
How do you account for the differences in these reports that we're hearing from different teams of scientists? Because to the layperson, it's pretty darn confusing.
Yeah. Well, you know, these are initial estimates. Are really more like a rough estimate. They help you kind of set a roadmap as to where you're going to head. And they allow you, with more time and more science that goes on, allow you to have a much more improved finished product. The fact that two groups disagree as to the starting point, that's just science.
You wrote an essay about your experience trying to communicate the science and how it was presented in news stories. And you wrote, "It is incumbent on scientists and journalists to keep the results in perspective and refrain from veering into misleading waters. Unfortunately, in this case, both parties failed." So what went wrong?
I think the scientists probably didn't set the results up in the context of these two potentially conflicting reports. I didn't think they were conflicting. On the flip side, I think journalists, and there's not many science journalists as much as they used to be, so I think some journalists kind of think about these science cases much like the O.J. Simpson case, where there's something new every day, per se. And I think they were expecting that our story would be following the heels of the last two, you know, news releases, almost like a Charles Dickens serial novel. And that's just not the case where all science works. You know, we just don't live in a world of CSI and of those other TV shows where you get an answer in 8 seconds. It just takes time.
Did you get the sense that while you were looking for some light here, some of us in the media were looking for the heat, trying to look for the conflict?
Yeah, sure. I mean, there was. But, I mean, that's what sells newspapers, and I understand that. You know, I think it was a whole series of crossed wires. I mean, I think, you know, there was a big press release and press conference about the results from our study showing evidence of a plume, and it was right on the heels of two other stories. And so it kind of seemed obvious probably to a lot of people that, you know, we were the third round, you know, of this ongoing battle. And in reality, we were just a small piece of the pie of a very, very big bakery called the Gulf of Mexico. I mean, it's just, you know, it's a big piece of science that has to be done to understand the whole aspect of the spill.
What might scientists have done better to communicate all this?
One of the problems that, you know, my colleagues and I have is that we often critique science very hard. I mean, we're really pretty tough on each other. And sometimes when we're asked by the journalists what we think of a paper, you know, I might think it's a really good paper, but I may say, oh, but I don't really believe in what they say in figure three. But that doesn't necessarily mean that I think these people are bad scientists. I think what's happening is that you'll get scientists speaking to a journalist and critiquing a paper like they're speaking to their office mate, and who would kind of take the big picture, where I think sometimes the journalist way may magnify, you know, that one little misgiving I may have.
So what's the lesson there? Not talk to journalists, or change the way you talk to journalists, or what?
No, I think that scientists would do well by understanding a little bit about what a journalist's life is, that your regular beat reporter, you know, works on the time scales of 3 to 5, 6 hours. Regular scientist works on the time scales of 6, 10, 12 months. many of the journalists, you know, in the morning, maybe covering a car crash, in the afternoon an oil spill. And so I don't think the scientists understand the life of a journalist. And I think if they did and they listened to the questions, they might be able to do help out science better in the long run. They also have to understand that they have to say no. And they also have to say, I have no comment. And I think sometimes, you know, we get so excited that somebody finally cares about what we have to say, they may ask a question that leads us down a path that, you know, we really can't get out of.
What can we learn here from previous spills, say with Exxon Valdez? How long was it before scientists really had their arms around what had become of that oil?
Well, the Valdez spill, there was a very nice paper written by some outstanding scientists about 5 years after the spill who tried to answer all those questions.
5 years.
5 years. With so much attention on this spill, you know, things could move faster. That doesn't mean any sloppier, but I would hope that maybe in about a year from now, there might be 5 or 10 people sit in a room and spend about a week and crunch some numbers, and they might be able to give you a number that's probably pretty robust. That would seem reasonable to me. You know, we work at a pace of prudence. And I think a lot of the audience works on a pace of urgency. And in most cases, those don't mesh.
Christopher Reddy is a marine scientist at the Woods Hole Oceanographic Institution. Thanks very much for your time.
Yeah, my pleasure.